Hello and welcome to the Arizona Capital Times on Sun Sounds. My name is John Coe. I am in Flagstaff, and I will be your volunteer reader for today, reading articles that were published in the Arizona Capital Times on or about April 18th, 2025. Headline: Axon gets approval for Scottsdale headquarters from Senate. Written by Jamar Younger and published in the Arizona Capital Times on April 15th. 2025. The Senate approved a bill on April 15th that would allow Axon to build its global headquarters in Scottsdale without needing zoning approval from voters. Senate Bill 1543 would require cities with populations between 200 and 500,000 to allow hotels and multifamily residential housing to be built in areas zoned for light industrial use without needing an application which would require a public hearing. The legislation was crafted to accommodate the company, which wants to build a sprawling headquarters near Loop 101 and Hayden Road. The campus would include 1,900 apartments and condominiums, a hotel, and retail integrated into the company's headquarters. About 30% of the apartments would be allocated for workers. The Scottsdale City Council originally approved zoning for the project in November, but a group called Taxpayers Against Unlawful Apartment Zoning Exemptions collected signatures to send the measure to the ballot after some residents expressed opposition to the headquarters. The bill passed a final read in the Senate, inspiring support and opposition from lawmakers on both sides of the aisle. Supporters of the bill said it was important to keep the company and the jobs it promises to bring to the new headquarters in Arizona. Quote, "If they leave, I guarantee you it will be very difficult to start building back that reputation, a reputation we have built over the years, not only for having a great program to bring companies here, but our tax program and, yes, in fact, our school system," said Senator Vince Leach, a Republican from Tucson. Senator Brian Fernandez, a Democrat from Yuma, said helping the company stay in Arizona would continue to help spur economic growth and the creation of high-paying jobs. Quote, "It's about keeping high-paying, future-focused jobs right here, growing our economy and showing the world that Arizona is a place where innovation thrives," Fernandez said. "We should all want Axon to grow here, because when Arizona companies lead, Arizona companies win." The bill drew staunch criticism from legislators who viewed the bill as special legislation that would circumvent the will of Scottsdale voters who might not have a say in the zoning for the development. Quote, "An election has actually been called and has actually been scheduled," said Senator John Kavanaugh, a Republican from Fountain Hills. Quote, "A vote for this bill will cancel that election. That's not theoretical, that's actual. So this is voter suppression on steroids." The issue reminded Senator Lauren Kuby, a Democrat from Tempe, of the Arizona Coyotes proposal to build a stadium and entertainment district when Kuby was a Tempe city councilwoman. Quote, "It's not about apartments. It's not about how we grow our cities. It is about the will of the voters," Kuby said. "And how can we take away the expressed will of the Scottsdale voters who want to vote on this?" Axon released a statement saying the bill would provide, quote, "Arizona with the tools we need to grow our economy. In our case, it will help create more than 5,500 high-quality jobs in Arizona and deliver $38 billion in economic impact to our home state over the next decade." According to the statement, quote, "It helps ensure that Arizona remains competitive for valuable economic development opportunities, and this legislation brings real solutions to the state's housing supply crisis, creating more places to live in the valley at a time when affordability and availability are out of reach for too many Arizonans." Headline: Grijalva, Hernandez, and Fox file nominations to replace the late Raul Grijalva. Written by Reagan Priest and published in the Arizona Capital Times on April 15th, 2025. The stage is set in the race to fill late United States Representative Raul Grijalva's seat in the Congressional District 7 after candidates filed nomination petitions on April 14th to secure their spot on the ballot. In a race that is all but certain to be decided in the primary, all eyes have been on the Democratic candidates Adelita Grijalva, Daniel Hernandez, and Deja Fox. All three submitted far more than the required 798 signatures to make the ballot by deadline, with Grijalva submitting the most at 1,812. Grijalva, who hopes to fill her father's seat, noted she reached the 798 signature requirement only 4.5 hours after announcing her candidacy, thanks to the state's online signature gathering website. She told reporters at a press conference on April 14th that her success indicates that voters in CD7 are looking for someone to carry Raul Grijalva's progressive torch forward. Quote, "Nobody's going to be able to fill my father's shoes, and I'm not going to try, but I do stand on really broad shoulders, and I'm standing on my own 2 feet," Grijalva said. She recently resigned from her position on the Pima County Board of Supervisors, where she has served for 4 years, to run for the CD7 seat. Prior to that, Grijalva served for 20 years on the Tucson Unified School District Governing Board. Hernandez, a former state lawmaker, is also part of a political family with deep ties to Tucson. He and his sisters, State Representatives Alma Hernandez, a Democrat from Tucson, and Consuelo Hernandez, a Democrat from Tucson, are known for their moderate bent and pro-Israel stances. Scott Jones, the state legislative director for the International Association of Sheet Metal Air, Rail, and Transportation Workers, announced the union's endorsement of Daniel Hernandez at the press conference held on April 14th because of his centrist streak. Quote, "They are very moderate. They can work with anybody and everybody that will work with them," Jones said of the Hernandez siblings. Hernandez submitted 1,724 signatures and announced that his campaign has raised over $400,000 and secured another union endorsement from the Arizona Federation of Teachers. Grijalva and Hernandez will be fighting for crucial endorsements in the next few weeks from labor unions, environmental groups, and progressive organizations. Grijalva noted that many organizations are not yet ready to endorse because they were not expecting to have to make endorsements during an off year for Arizona elections, but she has the backing of some of Arizona's largest Democratic names, like Senators Ruben Gallego and Mark Kelly, and former United States Representative Gabby Giffords. The two candidates have split the state legislature's Democratic caucus nearly in half, with Hernandez claiming endorsements from state senators Eva Diaz, Sally Ann Gonzalez, and state representatives Kevin Volk, Elda Luna Najera, Myron Sosi, and Lydia Hernandez. Grijalva is backed by Senate Minority Leader Priya Sundarajan, Senator Rosanna Gabaldon, and Representatives Mariana Sandoval, Betty Villegas, Stephanie Stahl-Hamilton, Nancy Gutierrez, and Chris Mathis. The race is shaping up to be a fight between progressive and moderate Democratic ideas, with Grijalva pledging to uphold her father's legacy and Hernandez arguing Democrats did not have a winning message in 2024. Quote, "I think the biggest problem that we're having right now is the Democratic Party is frankly out of touch with what the needs of everyday Arizonans are," Hernandez told the Capital Times. Hernandez did not directly respond to a question about whether or not he is the moderate candidate in the race, but emphasized his ability to work with people in both political parties during his time in the legislature and said it is something that he plans to carry over if elected. Grijalva has yet to respond to inquiries from the Arizona Capital Times. While Grijalva and Hernandez are the highest profile candidates in the race, they are not the only Democrats on the primary ballot. Deja Fox, a political influencer who worked on Kamala Harris's presidential campaign in 2024, is also running for the seat. Fox has framed herself as an alternative to the traditional Democratic establishment and is one of several Gen Z candidates running for blue seats in Congress this year. Her campaign did not immediately respond to requests for comment. The candidates have limited time to get their message out to voters, with mail ballots going out on June 18th and the primary scheduled to take place on July 15th. You've been listening to the Arizona Capital Times on Sunsounds of Arizona. Sunsounds of Arizona has been providing information access since 1979, and you can always listen to our live stream at sunsounds.org. Headline: Stolen Valor Bill passes Senate as feud between two lawmakers simmers. Written by Jamar Younger and published in the Arizona Capital Times on April 17, 2025. A bill that would establish criminal penalties for individuals who impersonate Armed Forces veterans garnered wide support from Senate members, including a yes vote from a lawmaker who had been accused of blocking the measure earlier this session. Senator Wendy Rogers, a Republican from Flagstaff, released a statement on April 15th after the passage of Senate Bill 1424, known as the Master Sergeant Orlando Dona Valor Act, saying she was honored to have, quote, facilitated meaningful changes on an earlier version of the Stolen Valor Bill so that this legislation can now better provide a practical solution for holding bad actors accountable. Rogers made similar comments during the final read of the bill on the Senate floor. Quote, "This bill reflects the final product of how we craft and create laws here in the legislature, of conversation, of compromise and teamwork between the House and the Senate," Rogers said. Rogers was surrounded by a group of senators who had previously served in the military and as first responders, including Senator Mark Fincham, a Republican from Prescott, who was also accused of opposing the bill. Quote, "I'm honored to have facilitated improvements within this bill so that it can cross the finish line today with bipartisan support," Rogers said. However, Representative Walt Blackman, a Republican from Snowflake and the bill's sponsor, said Rogers wasn't involved in any efforts to amend the bill and used the moment for political gain after she attempted to block the bill earlier this session. Quote, "It's disheartening, and to tell you the truth, it hurt more veterans seeing that than it did anything else," Blackman said, "because she stood in the way, and now she's taking credit for something she didn't do." The two lawmakers have clashed this session as Blackman worked with a bipartisan coalition of legislators and veterans groups to advance the bill. Blackman, a United States Army combat veteran, accused Rogers of blocking the previous version of the bill after it was approved in the House and was assigned to the Senate Judiciary and Elections Committee, which Rogers chairs. He previously said he believed Rogers held the bill because she and Senator Mark Fincham, a Republican from Prescott, wanted to protect Steve Slayton, Blackman's opponent, in the 2024 Legislative District 7 Republican primary. Slayton was accused of misrepresenting his military service during his campaign last year. Rogers, who was a lieutenant colonel and pilot in the United States Air Force, responded by accusing Blackman of having a personal vendetta and refusing to work with her staff on amendments she said she wanted to amend the bill to comport with existing federal laws. Rogers also said Blackman ran the legislation to, quote, hamstring political opponents instead of holding people accountable for impersonating veterans. Quote, "This bill would weaponize state government against federally regulated veterans who are already subject to the Stolen Valor Act of 2013. State government does not have access to records, including off-the-books combat operations," she said in a statement last month. Although the original House bill stalled, the legislation was reintroduced as a striker amendment to a bill originally sponsored by Senator Shauna Bollock, a Republican from Phoenix. Bollock previously said she agreed to run the striker to keep the Stolen Valor measure for moving forward. Both of her grandfathers served in the United States Armed Forces. Blackmun and Bollock met with Senate President Warren Peterson, a Republican from Gilbert, earlier this month to discuss the bill, and Blackmun agreed to make changes that would address concerns raised by the legislative process. His amendment aligned the bill with statutes and clarified what happens if an elected official is found to be guilty of a felony or misdemeanor. He also changed the sections of language to align with fraud and scheme statutes. Quote, "So for her to say that she offered an amendment or there was any type of negotiation with her, it's absolutely not okay. She's straight being dishonest about the whole thing," Blackmun said. The updated Stryker amendment passed the House before returning to the Senate for final approval, bypassing Rogers' committee in the process. Bollock paid tribute to her two grandfathers when she explained her support for the legislation on the Senate floor. Quote, "I don't know about you, but when I have campaigned across my district and I meet veterans face to face, not only do I thank them for their service, but I let them know I'm going to be there to support them," Bollock said. "This is an easy vote for me." Headline: Arizona schools must choose between DEI or federal funding. Written by Kira Riley and published in the Arizona Capital Times on April 17, 2025. The threat of federal funding losses for Arizona public schools becomes more salient by the day as the Arizona Department of Education probes for compliance with new federal interpretations of the law, and the United States Department of Education walks back extensions granted to schools to spend COVID relief funds. The result is outstanding reimbursements and a fear of further lost funds, which could jeopardize about 7.6% of the state's education funding, equaling about $767 million in grant awards in 2024. With new guidance from the United States Department of Education on COVID deadlines, diversity, equity, and inclusion, or DEI, and privacy laws, the state superintendent of public instruction, Tom Horn, maintains the department is within its rights to withhold federal funding in line with advisements from the federal government. Subheadline: Privacy. Schools first got a warning over student privacy and parental rights. On March 28, United States Secretary of Education Linda McMahon sent a letter to states alerting them of alleged misapplications of Family Educational Rights and Privacy Act, FERPA, and Protection of Pupil Rights Amendment, PPRA, by failing to disclose the entirety of a student's mental and physical health with a particular gesture toward pronouns and gender identity. Quote, "Attempts by school officials to separate children from their parents, convince children to feel unsafe at home, or burden children with the weight of keeping secrets from their loved ones is a direct affront to the family unit. When such conduct violates the law, the department will take swift action," McMahon wrote. This letter reminds educational institutions receiving federal financial assistance that they are obligated to abide by FERPA and PPRA if they expect federal funding to continue. Horn forwarded the memo to schools and asked for documentation showing compliance with federal privacy laws, echoing the threat of lost federal funds if they fail to comply. The United States Department of Education is set for an April 30th deadline to prove compliance. As it stands now, the Arizona Department of Education has received about 365 responses out of 658 attestations so far. Subheadline: Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion. On April 3rd, schools got another reminder of legal obligations under Title IV from the United States Department of Education, again warning schools of lost federal funds if they adopt any diversity, equity, and inclusion programs or consider race in admissions, hiring, promotion, and scholarships. In response, Horn sent out another round of letters and a form to attest to compliance with the federal department's holding. The United States Department of Education set an April 24th deadline to return all attestation letters, and any districts or charters which fail to comply will see a hold on their federal funding. Then, on April 11th, Horn went a step further and threatened Kyrene School District with a $1.5 million federal funding loss via press release because of an alleged adoption of DEI language in its staff social-emotional wellness policy. Aaron Helm, Executive Director of Communications and Engagement for Kyrene School District, said the district had received no formal or informal notice of any funds being withheld and noted the policy at issue had not yet been formally adopted by the governing board. Rather, the board gave it a preliminary first read approval. And though they haven't adopted the policy at the center of the state's department threat, they maintain that the social emotional wellness policy for staff, as well as the district's existing DEI policy, are both legal. Quote, all Kyrene policies, including policies around inclusion and social emotional wellness, are in compliance with state and federal laws, including Title VI of the Civil Rights Act. Superintendent Laura Tonez said in a statement, quote, I encourage anyone with questions to read the language in Kyrene's policies. Some of it is pulled directly from Title VI. So far, the department has received 324 attestations out of 658 districts and charters, though Doug Nick, a department spokesman, noted that not all charters receive federal funds. A spokesperson for Attorney General Chris Mays declined to say whether the Attorney General's office would consider legal action against the underlying United States Department of Education policy or any future actions taken by the Arizona Department of Education to withhold federal funds. Subheadline: COVID grants cut short. But the Attorney General is involved in another area of looming federal funding losses. In a letter sent on March 28th, the Federal Department of Education walked back an extension for schools to spend ESSER funds through March 2026 to March 28th, 2025. Quote, extending deadlines for COVID-related grants, which are in fact taxpayer funds, years after the COVID pandemic ended is not consistent with the department's priorities and thus not a worthwhile exercise of its discretion, McMahon wrote. Mays, along with 15 other attorneys general, sued to restore access to the ESSER funding, citing one instance of already interrupted funding in Arizona. Cedar Unified School District, a district with one K-8 school, Jedito Elementary, located on the Navajo Nation, stands to lose about $1 million set aside for bathroom renovations and virtual tutoring, with $486,749 awaiting reimbursement and $569,375 yet to be spent. The result of no reimbursement and a lack of funds has so far meant the loss of six staff members, including one teacher, three classroom aides, a school bus driver, and a custodian. The potential loss of additional teachers and staff if the prior granted extension on ESSER funds is not honored by the new administration. The school also had to cancel its online tutoring contract, which the superintendent claims has improved academic performance. The school is currently looking to finish up bathroom and infrastructure repair projects, but cannot do so without the funding. Quote, DOE's continued suspension or withholding of ESSER 3 extended liquidation funds may cause Cedar Unified to lay off more staff members, further delay necessary school infrastructure repair projects, and deprive students of much-needed academic support services that will be difficult, if not impossible, to recover. Superintendent and principal at Cedar Unified School District, Dean Slaga, wrote in a declaration to the court. Beyond Cedar Unified, the Arizona Department of Education estimates that less than 10 other local education agencies could be affected by the extension deadline changes, which would cost around $3.6 million in total. In any case, Horn believes in the department's ability to comply with federal orders, including refusing to disperse federal funds if necessary. The Arizona Department of Education has been responsible for distributing both federal and state education dollars to schools for many decades, and we must do so in accordance with the law, Horn said in a prepared statement. Quote, the United States Department of Education has issued guidance which requires my department to certify that all public school districts and charters that take federal money use those funds according to that guidance, and that cannot be ignored. Headline, Daniel Adelman, The Fight for Arizona's Constitution. Written by Kira Riley and published in the Arizona Capital Times on April 20th, 2025. Daniel Adelman took up the helm at the Center for Law in the Public Interest in 2018. During his tenure, he led litigation to keep people housed during the pandemic, cut the legislature's ability to sneak provisions into budget bills, ensured funding for vital school facilities, and most recently challenged a $15 million pork appropriation to the Prescott Rodeo. As he transitions out of his role, he hopes his successor shares his passion for leaving the law better than he found it. Question: what drew you to public accountability law? Answer: the schoolwork was actually what drew me to the center. I joined the board in 1994, the same year that the center won the first case that declared the way Arizona was financing its public schools was unconstitutional. I used to run this camp for underprivileged kids, and I used to go to schools to meet with parents of these kids so we could assure them that their kids would be safe and everything. The schools were horrible. We won that case, and the state ended up putting in over $1 billion fixing and building schools. I went back to those same schools, and they were nice, and it just drew me to the power of impact legislation and forcing the state to obey its constitution. Question: how has the state changed in terms of compliance and constitutionality? Answer: in a lot of ways, it's really worse than it's ever been. Part of the reason that I really appreciate good journalism is people have to know what's really going on. And if all you get is your social media feed, or all you look at are reporters that are going to agree with you and feed you whatever, it is really easy to try to take away people's rights. I think that conspiracy-driven narrative is for real, and it's taken hold, not by any means with all of the legislators, but with a lot of them. Republicans were in charge in both houses when I started, but everything was very fact-driven, and people chose which fact they think are most important, and that's fine, but it wasn't all just fake, and I think that's changed, and it's scary. Question: has your approach changed at all now that conspiratorial thinking has gained more legitimacy? Answer: it makes the law even more important, right? Because there's this narrative that if we're increasing public school funding and they're just wasting it all on administration, and if all you're doing is giving a press release, it's super easy to say stuff like that. When you go to court, you have to prove it with evidence. There is no evidence to support that in Arizona. Arizona spends less on administration than every other state. I feel like it's even more important with some of the battles between the different houses in the legislature or between the legislature and the governor. There are times when you need a court and you need someone like The Reason. You've been listening to the Arizona Capital Times, a production of Sun Sounds of Arizona in Flagstaff. Once again, my name is John Coe. Thank you for listening.